Just because of the times.
Yeah.
But that's what he wanted, and by gosh, we'll do it.
Well, so, you know, Tom had one, so
yeah,
Vic ought to have one.
Tom had one. Bob Schraub's just came out a couple of years ago. Barbara wrote her own. So, yeah, exactly. Great. So, tell me how you met Vicatia.
I probably should have thought of this in advance of our meeting, but, you know, he was a fixture on the landscape in Washington County before I became active in politics.
Mm-hmm.
So he was already through the House and in the state Senate when I started getting interested in running for the House.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, he was a known businessman in downtown Portland, where my law practice was.
Yeah.
In fact, right around the corner.
Oh, great.
I probably wasn't a block away from Atiyah's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could bump into him on the street in downtown Portland pretty easily.
Yeah.
You would see him at every kind of political dinner that might go on in Washington County in particular.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories about an occasion like that was a meeting of the Republican Women of Washington County.
Mm-hmm.
They had an annual chicken dinner and potato salad, and everything was cooked by individuals and brought to bear. And then it was, I think it was a fundraiser probably, and they asked Vic to keynote the event.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood up and he thanked everybody for the wonderful occasion and said, you know, the special presentation of food. He says, "I was really hoping we'd have chicken." And, of course, that got a lot of gut laughs because that's probably what he'd had the last seven nights at seven other events.
Exactly.
But he was, you know, he was a very approachable, accessible kind of politician as well as business person.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you first go into politics yourself?
So I ran in 1978 and was elected.
Uh-huh.
And that was the year that he became governor.
Right. After
so,
the abortive 74 attempt.
Yeah. And I had a I had a little bit different view of the 74 attempt because I think that was the one where we had a well, let's see. I you can probably help me on this. One of my early mentors in politics in Oregon was Clay Myers.
Yeah.
And Clay ran for the Republican nomination.
Yeah,
when
he ran in 74.
Yeah, when Vic and Tom.
No. Tom ran in 78.
Okay.
Tom was just leaving in 74. So Vic knocked off Clay.
Yeah.
Much to everybody's surprise, except Vic's.
Yeah. And of course, I was on a campaign team for Clay, not so much because I opposed Vic in any way. Entirely because, you know, Clay had befriended me as a student and, you know, kind of nurtured and mentored and brought me along. And then, so I saw that race and then, then the succeeding one would have been his inauguration and my swearing in on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
So really from that point and then even on his re-election, he and Jerry Thompson and Denny Miles and I and, I don't know, not more than three or four other people were invited to kind of be his inner kitchen cabinet around the Capitol to prepare him for the debates with Kulongoski.
I have Jerry's entire notebook.
Yeah. And so I remember, you know, sitting with them and, you know, offering insights to what I then thought were the political climbs.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. So you come in 78. The 78 session has been described by Republicans and Democrats as the apogee.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And, you know, and in it we come up with eventually this money needs to go back to taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also been described as hanging over it was the property tax measures that had failed in the fall of 78.
Right. Yeah.
Prop 13 had passed the summer before in California.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of looming.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's your sense of, do you agree with that assessment? Is it?
I do. I've thought of it many times. The and for a freshman member, it was kind of a heady time because even though we were in a the other episode that's going on simultaneously with this is a very close number of the majority in the House of Representatives.
Right. Yeah.
And with any strays moving across the line, you could actually get things done in 78.
Yeah.
So there was this appetite for restoring what looked like a surplus.
Mm-hmm.
Right smack dab in front of what was a looming recession.
Right. And but nobody knew Paul Volcker was going to
get
strange yet. Yes.
Yeah. So I've thought of it many times, and I thought of my own vote for what was then the inaugural of the so-called kicker, which has been now embedded in the Constitution, and it was a time when probably everything peaked.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe there have been peaks since, but it was the beginning of a change, and for Vic it became the beginning of a very important time for a skilled and experienced legislator who understood what both in the House and the Senate were capable of to manage the state as it came through then what was at that time the deepest recession, I think, in modern times.
Still is. The one we just went through didn't meet the record.
Hmm.
So as a freshman, did you have a sense that Vic was someone who understood the legislature and understood that whole process? Did you interact with him, or were you interacting with your own leadership?
I was blessed or cursed with, I think, the only freshman vice chairmanship of a committee, which was energy and environment, and it was the time of nuclear power plant that was to have been inaugurated in Oregon.
Pebble
Springs.
Yeah, Pebble Springs.
And that episode, one way or another, I think launched me in visibility my freshman year because I ended up with a minority report to defend the Pebble Springs construction at a time when it was pretty unpopular to be talking nuclear power, and Jane Fonda was making a movie about China Syndrome.
Which opened the same week that the China Syndrome happened.
Yeah. So, Three Mile Island. And so I just think I was thrust very early into a visible position, and I don't know whether Vic was paying any attention in particular to me or anyone else, but my sense was that he was the wizened manager upstairs, in the governor's office, who had just seen about everything.
Yeah. Were you working with Pat Amadeo?
Oh, I knew Pat very well. Yeah. And I think my own political background, long before I ran for the legislature, put me in touch with a lot of people. When Irv Enna was the state Republican Party chairman, and really just about the emergence of Walter Huss and a very conservative Christian group of Republicans who sought control of precincts and then county central committees, I found myself as the acting executive director in the Salem office while I was in law school of the state Republican Party. Right on the heels of Mike Ragsdale, also another Washington County figure who then went to the Senate, and he and Vic were very close, and their work together in the Senate. So I think that, and then going way back, my father had been chairman of the Multnomah County Republican Central Committee during the Eisenhower years, and then spent 22 years on
back when there were Republicans in Multnomah County.
It was you think about a Republican chairman.
Yeah.
So I kind of grew up in that milieu, and so maybe back to your first question, knowing of Vic Atiyeh, I can't think of a time when I didn't know of Vic Atiyeh in my adulthood.
Yeah. Yeah. So any issues jump out in that 79 session? I got to tell you, I've talked to like five people from that session, and nothing really jumps out, except that's when Hardy Myers got his judicial reform started that then hooked 2 years ago, and you know that. But
yeah, so Hardy was actually chair of the House Judiciary Committee.
He was Speaker in '79.
So
he becomes chair when he leaves the speakership.
Yeah.
So '83.
Yeah.
He becomes the chair.
Yeah.
Basically, to implement things, all of which were vetoed by Vic, and he to this day has no idea why. So.
Yeah, and I don't think I can add anything to that.
Okay. Okay.
That one, it doesn't stand out in my mind, even though I was on judiciary all three terms.
Yeah.
And where I was going to go, and I'll just leap forward a few years about Hardy. We were a judiciary committee actually made up of lawyers then. So few, and I don't know what the count would be currently, but there was a diminution of lawyers over time just because it was too expensive to spend a lot of time at the legislature.
Yeah.
I learned that lesson.
Yeah. That's why Hardy left.
And it probably, yeah.
He had kids going to Stanford and Cornell and stuff, and it was time to not be in the legislature.
So, but when Hardy was chair of that committee, it was a 5-4 committee based on apportioned seats. And to this day, I really recall maybe one occasion when the committee, because of the way it was managed and the collegiality of it, there was one vote that afterwards, when they finished calling the roll, was 5-4. You know, it was all five Democrats and against all four Republicans. And nobody really noted that until a couple of minutes after it happened and said,
"Oh wait,
is this a first?"
Yeah.
I call that out only because it still was the end of an era when people talk to each other and work things out. And sure, politics was there, and it wasn't the halcyon days of the legislative process, but it was an era that is different than the one we're in now.
Yeah.
And so Vic was bridging a time when you could call the majority or the minority leaders into the governor's office, and you could have conversations about what was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Not what you liked, but what was possible.
Yeah.
And I know that still goes on. It'll be ever thus. But it was, he had a comforting style when he was in that mode. And he always had just, at the catbird moment, he always had just a little smile on his face because he sort of had already figured out what all the chess moves would have to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, in hindsight, I saw him as a person who really understood process, but he liked people. And his approachability and his likability was an asset.
Yeah. So 79 ends. Paul Volcker puts the screws on the economy. Interest rates go through the roof, which hits us just brutally hard.
Yeah.
Then 1980, we begin a series of special sessions that peak in 82. Did any of those special sessions jump out to you in the way they were organized or disorganized or anything? The one I'll want to pick your brain on, if you can remember it, the January 1982 session.
Okay.
It was the long one. You guys kind of met, went on recess, came back.
Had to wait for committees to...
Yeah, exactly. And in talking to the Democratic leadership, they didn't have any hint from Attia what was coming to that session. Everything else was, by gosh, we planned, and it was 8 hours, 10 hours. But that one, they just hit them out of the blue. Do any of the other sessions stand out to you?
They blur for me now, but I do know that I'm trying to think of which year was then the longest session of the legislature. It exceeded 180 days, and I think we also then had specials on top of that, which was really destructive to home life and business life for a lot of people. And that probably contributed to tension. It's really hard, particularly if you're not on the committee of jurisdiction, which is hammering out the deal. The rest of the time is march in place. Plenty of time for speculation and rumor milling and that kind of thing. and I'm speaking generically because I haven't thought about the differences between the sessions. But what I do remember clearly was in caucus one day when Donna Zajon, looking at a proposal from the governor's office, mm-hmm. said, by golly, he had one more rabbit in the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuck with me because it was sort of descriptive of, okay, we can use, we can push expenses across the line to the next biennium, we can manipulate on the margins, we can do, heroic actions, one of which sticks out in my mind as one of the big mistakes,
mm-hmm.
and it proved to be a big mistake,
mm-hmm.
and that was the taking of the SAIF trust funds, even though the Republican Attorney General at the time, Dave Frohnmayer, gave us an opinion that we were in the clear.
Right.
Dave had served on judiciary with most of the lawyers, and,
mm-hmm.
and we had high respect for his
mm-hmm.
Acumen and capability. Notwithstanding even the business community that I had favorable support from,
mm-hmm.
I felt, okay, the governor's put this forward. It's something we can get our hands on, and blindly, I think, went down that path. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know how many years later, but a couple of decades later, it got reversed. And
It was pretty quick because it was Wally Carson's first major decision on the Supreme Court,
okay.
and Vick had appointed him,
yeah,
which caused Wally,
great pain.
But Vick appointed me to think about these things,
yeah.
So he voted against it,
yeah,
yeah.
But
it was Ted Kulongoski 20 years later who actually paid it back.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking.
I interviewed him.
Yeah.
He said, when I wrote that final check, it was a big check. It was like $240 million for the $70 million or whatever it was.
Yeah,
so,
and of course, since then, I've experienced similar things. Ironically, I think Ted or John had appointed me to the Oregon Cultural Trust
mm-hmm.
in a season when the legislature was desperate for funds, and they did a sweep at the end.
Yeah.
And took, among other things, money that was called trust money, and I thought back to, okay, this is kind of payback time. It harkens back to that grab for the SAIF funds.
Yeah. Vic's, this is all during the 82 election, and Vic's money guy was a safe
mm-hmm.
board person who was ticked off for a single day and then said, let's go win the election.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I remember getting a call from my Washington County campaign manager's husband on vacation in Hawaii, who had worked for years to isolate that money and was a large industrial guy. I got a new one that day.
Yeah, absolutely. There was also an income tax surcharge
mm-hmm.
that came earlier.
Yeah.
Was that a tough one to get through? It was a similar kind of thing. It was kind of like, this is the end of our rope.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here we go.
Yeah. I know that we even flirted with sales taxes, and I think
mm-hmm.
we actually moved a proposal out of the House where it had to come from and got it out of the House by one vote. And I remember being intimately involved in finding that one vote on the premise that we have to get it out there to discuss it.
Yeah.
So there were some raw nerves, I think, on taxes. But again, I mean, this is a Republican governor that's
mm-hmm.
that's putting this forward. You would not have expected it.
Mm-hmm.
He hadn't done a no new taxes, read my lips statement
right.
exactly. But it
Grover
was...
Grover Norquist was still a twinkle somewhere.
It
yeah.
was an unlikely thing to have happened.
Yeah.
But it's what it took.
Yeah, absolutely.
In some ways, a gamble and very statesmanlike.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk about the 82 election. You're involved in being one of the debate preparers.
Yeah.
Did you have tough elections at all in 80, 82?
Actually, in 78, I was pleasantly surprised to win a seat over an entrenched incumbent.
Mm-hmm.
And that may also have elevated my visibility being in Washington County with Vic, who was just winning his seat in the governor's office. And so the next time I had no opponent in 80, and got a write-in and did the nominated by both parties.
Yeah,
82 almost the same thing. And then I resigned my seat in the legislature before I finished my third term to take a position with AT&T. But no, I was then in a solid Republican district. I don't think it's so much so now, but King City and Summerfield, strong
Republican as it gets in Washington County these days.
Yeah, really. Much bigger district.
Yeah.
It stretched all the way from Rex Hill down to Tualatin, up into Beaverton, Washington Square, and of course, as populations have increased, it's just
a nice...
I think
the Washington part, county part now is just like a thin finger. So it's got a lot of yamhilly, you know, that kind of stuff in it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So the answer for me was no, I did not have difficulties getting reelected. And there is a story here I would go to, but I think you want to talk about the election first and Vic.
Go to the story.
So Kathy and I had... been married for 11 years. She was slow about me getting into politics and because she'd never been around it. And so when it happened, it was a new and exciting life for us. And we had our first child while we were in the legislature. And Spencer was our first and only, born in 81. And he was resident in the Capitol in a bassinet during special session. And, of course, we have the obligatory pictures of him standing on the House floor desk, you know, grabbing onto the microphone to steady himself, probably the way his dad did. and it was one of those things that can change a life. And I really was, I thought, pretty ambitious at the time. And I saw myself, you know, running for statewide office. And I embarked on that. When my, well, I'll call him my first mentor, Clay Myers, indicated to me that he was going to be leaving the Treasury. And there was, I'm sure he and Vic conversed about that very privately. I think I first knew from Clay that Vic was considering me as one of a handful of people for the appointment. I try not to embellish this, but I'm pretty sure that the governor and I had that conversation alone in his office one day, and that if there were to be a vacancy, that I would have the appointment. That's probably not something that's very public. I embarked on that race to get the Republican nomination. My good friend Bill Rutherford and, let's see, I want to say David Chen. Does that name pop into your mind?
It does, but I'm not sure.
I think the three of us sought the Republican nomination before Clay had made any announcement. But it was... it must have been obvious at some point to all of us that there was going to be a potential vacancy there. It was during a special session, and I'm thinking it had to be 82.
Was it for the 82 election? Was it, would it have been the same time as the governor, or would it be offset?
No, it would have been off. It would have been 84 general election.
Okay.
But in, and I'm trying to remember whether there was a special in, well, 83 would have been a general session.
Yeah, 83 is a general session. Yeah. 84, I had them all written down at home. I haven't loaded them on here yet.
Yeah.
There was the unitary tax one in the 84. That was the biggest one, or most important one. It was short.
Well, I actually resigned in 83. at midnight on Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Intentional choice.
Mm-hmm.
Vic had two other opportunities, and I'll circle back around. Mike Ragsdale resigned his seat in the state Senate.
Mm-hmm.
He called me personally as one of the two House members in that Senate seat,
mm-hmm.
and explained what his circumstances were, and just assumed, and it was a logical assumption, that I'd be very interested in it as a mm-hmm. as a freshman member of the House. We're backing up a little bit.
Yeah.
Vic called and said, these opportunities don't happen. He said, you need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you're new, you're fresh, you know, you may have inexperience, but you have the attention of a good central committee that knows you and mm-hmm. a county commission that saw you win the last election.
Yeah.
So Vic weighed in and said, you need to go to the Senate. Mm-hmm. We were 28-32 in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps foolishly and perhaps too idealistically, I said, I think we can get the House, and if I give up a seat that's been held for three terms by a Democrat, I'm opening the door the wrong way mm-hmm. in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Declined to do that. But Vic weighed in then.
Yeah.
Where I'm going with this is, in the 83 session, I've told Jerry Thompson this, and my wife knows it, but I was alone very late at night, and we were dragging on and dragging on and dragging on, trying to get out the door as close to sine die. The governor, smoking a pipe in the private office. We had the little squawk box on. We were listening to the floor debate to see if there were any votes, but mm-hmm. only turning it up when there were votes, and I would mm-hmm. disappear and come back. And he started reminiscing
mm-hmm.
about his political career. And the words that stick out to me, and I hope his kids really appreciate this, because I think he was close with his family, mm-hmm. and I could tell at the memorial that his family was close with him.
Yeah, there were tons of them.
But he said to me, out of the blue, he said, you know, I've been at this for 24 years or longer at that point. And he said something to the effect, if there's anything I regret about having spent this much time in this building, it is that I didn't spend more time with my kids when they were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And it just hung there for a while.
Yeah.
What he knew was I had a child that had been born recently. And it was just hanging out there. Now, this is still in the context of he's offered to help me get to the Senate at one time.
Mm-hmm.
He's made it clear that if I want to move into one of the statewide seats, he'd be supportive of that.
Mm-hmm.
We had worked closely together on his reelection in 82, which I'm sure, you know, helped mm-hmm. our bond build.
Mm-hmm.
But when the opportunity came to sort of lay my cards down and say, okay, I'm really, really, really going to run for statewide office, or I've got a brand new child. After 11 years of marriage, I've got a youngster. This opens up whole new horizons.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you commented on about Hardy, you know, I've got to start thinking about paying for college. I've got to get my law practice back together. And then I had this rather marvelous offer from AT&T to go mm-hmm. to work. The governor's words stick in my mind to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the last moment when I decided, am I going to withdraw from a statewide political race that I always thought I wanted to do, what are the motivations? And the words, in part, that were ringing in my ear were the proffered advice about being around for your children while they're growing up.
Yeah.
And that was very possibly the greatest gift I ever got from Vic Atiyah.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about some vote or some nudge to mm-hmm. seek higher office. It was fatherly advice.
Yeah.
And so I'll flash forward to where we sit today at the Ford Family Foundation,
mm-hmm.
Which, for the record, I left in May of 2013. But Vic and I had lunch occasionally downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you meet in the basement?
Well, we went to La Brasserie the day that I'm thinking of. Which
Pat Amadeo would always have lunch with him in a basement somewhere.
Well, so. La Brasserie had a basement.
Oh, okay. Yeah, downstairs.
It has a downstairs.
In fact, I've been to a wedding reception.
Yeah.
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 And many ironies there, because in my teenage years, that had been the Headless Horseman, which was a teenage nightclub, and I had been a drummer in a local garage band and played
Perfect.
There many, many nights. So Vic and I were having lunch at La Brasserie, no agenda. Mm-hmm. Well, at least I didn't have one. It was mm-hmm. just catch-up time and mm-hmm. see how he was and I was. And he asked about my work at the Ford Family Foundation, said it must be amazing, and I said it really is mm-hmm. extremely gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to say I didn't have to charge by the hour. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to partake in an AT&T career where people got bothered every night at 6 o'clock during dinner by MCI, Sprint, and AT&T.
Right.
I didn't have to raise money as in politics, that the gratification of the philanthropic work was that somebody very thoughtfully had provided a legacy that was an endowment,
yeah.
and that the challenge now was to bring to bear the best way to distribute the endowment.
Yeah.
He indicated he didn't know how these things worked,
mm-hmm.
but he knew Ken Ford. I've never called him Ken Ford other than I think he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I know some of your board members. Would it be appropriate for me to talk to any of them? He was interested in being on the board of this foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps others, but he mm-hmm. was inquiring of me about this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Vic, you'd be an outstanding member of that board. They're a little gun-shy about getting too close to political figures, but you and I are ex-political figures at this point.
Dave Frohmeyer's on the wall.
Yeah, well, and he got here later.
Yeah, yeah.
But what the point of the exchange was, I said, Vic, we have age limits.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what are they? And I said, at that time, I think there was an age limit of 70. And I was thinking Vic was about my now age of mm-hmm. 68, and thinking mm-hmm. the boardroom politics on this are going to be, we wouldn't have him for a full term, and then he'd be termed mm-hmm. out by age. And so I said, Vic, I don't know with our age limits whether you'd get a full term out of it or not, and mm-hmm. that might be an issue that you ought to be mm-hmm. aware of. And he said, well, what is it? I said, 70 years old. He says, Norm, I'm 78 now. What I loved about that was, you know, here's a guy that's still looking for a way to mm-hmm. participate in the Oregon story and to, you know, be vital and yeah. engaged and, you know, doing the important work that people in the state cared about. And the foundation's mostly about rural Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's made an impact on rural Oregon.
Yeah.
So it was a bittersweet moment because other than a vote here or there, I think he had rarely ever asked me for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Here he was putting himself out there saying, counsel me.
Yeah.
And so the sweetness was, gosh, I actually have something to offer him for
yeah.
once.
That's great, because it's also that's a time when he's also beginning to cut back on boards.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted him on board.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the end of his life, he was active in an advisory capacity, like with a cool Chinese cemetery. It's called Lone Fir.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it was things like that that were really close to his heart.
Yeah.
And other than that, you know, Boy Scouts, he would drop in and salute.
Warm Springs.
Not well. Ted took his place on the board
mm-hmm.
earlier. But yeah, Vic was out there
yeah.
every time.
Yeah,
absolutely every time. But yeah, that's really interesting. Other things as an ex-governor. I mean, you talk about someone who had a love of the state and wanted to contribute in a real way. Did you see people asking him to contribute? I'm thinking, and talking to people, it's become really clear the things that Vic did well as governor management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, crossing party lines to get things done, the mm-hmm. pragmatism. You know, the governors since have done, I don't think any of them come close in management, but the pragmatism, crossing lines. But it seems that very few people kind of went to him and said, you know, for instance, in the recession we're going through now, or in the one at the beginning of the 2000s, boy, how would you manage this?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see people using him as a resource as an ex-governor, or was he just this grandfather of the state, as his daughter said?
The first image that jumps into my head with that question is he was still a visible, loyal Republican mm-hmm. figure in the state. Of course, mm-hmm. he wore the mantle to the time of his death of being the last Republican,
the latest
governor. Yes. And the very latest.
Yeah.
And it got later and later. But I would see him at the Dorchester Conference,
mm-hmm.
And Dolores.
Yeah,
and I saw them in later in their years at a very public function at Seven Feathers,
mm-hmm.
A big banquet event, and he was an honoree in that event, but. I think both of them had just recovered from illnesses and mm-hmm. maybe hip replacements and who knows what all, mm-hmm. but still wanting to be visible and engaged. The fact that he was there, he was always welcome at Dorchester.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was, you know, kind of family. The broader Republican family was in the room. It was important to the family that he be there, but that might fill closer, more closely, the notion of grandfather
right.
of the state.
Right.
But he, I think he welcomed that role.
Mm-hmm.
If he hadn't, you know, I've talked to all of the former governors who are still living,
mm-hmm.
And almost every one of them in their own way. Has said, you know, about a day after you've been the governor, the phone stops ringing, and it's a very humbling experience.
Yeah.
You know, you were making life and death decisions only a week ago, and now,
yeah.
now nobody's calling.
Yeah,
and I think Vic, like his peers, hungered to be called,
mm-hmm.
and but I think he made himself visibly available to be called.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm trying to think of a really good example of somebody approaching him and saying, we need you now, we need you for this. My sense is, having talked with Ted, comes to mind as one who may have actually talked to Vic.
Mm-hmm. That's when their relationship, it wasn't that they were enemies after
yeah.
82, but it's when it became what it became the last 10 years of his life.
Yeah.
Vic just adored Ted.
Yeah. Well,
but it was because Ted, as governor, picked up the phone and said, you know,
yes.
what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's think about this.
Yeah. And good for Ted. And I'm sure that Vic welcomed that.
Mm-hmm.
Can I jump to another anecdote?
Yeah, absolutely.
This was just back in the earliest of my freshman session. He's the brand new governor.
Mm-hmm.
The state does not have Mahonia Hall at this
right.
point. It has a little white cottage in downtown Salem that you've probably seen or visited.
Mm-hmm.
It's right behind the State Lands Division
mm-hmm.
now on, mm-hmm. on the Mill Creek. And in groups that could be managed in a small venue, we were invited over to a reception.
Mm-hmm.
And Dolores met us at the door and greeted everybody, and the governor was in the house holding court. And we walked in, and they had refreshed this building for the new governor,
mm-hmm.
new paint. And apparently, I can't remember whether Dolores actually called out that it had all new carpet, that the place had looked awful before.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, is it a Tia carpeting? And she said, oh, heavens no, the state of Oregon can't afford that.
Yep.
The flash forward many years, I ended up appointed by other governors to the Oregon Arts Commission and later the Cultural Trust. And mm-hmm. the offices in Oregon Biz and the State Lands Division looked down on that cottage.
Oh.
And one of the great serendipitous moments for me was when I met Megan Atiyah,
mm-hmm.
who manages still, I think, the 1% for the arts program.
Mm-hmm. Lives in the same place that Barbara Roberts lives.
Yes.
In the same condo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Vic and Dolores had held court in the little house right out Megan's window, right mm-hmm. down in the backyard, and very few other people that had that
yeah.
that same kinship over that. And to yeah. to this day, we still, I think, enjoy the fact that her grandfather was a friend and a mentor.
Yeah. And she got his big desk carved by the prisoners, which is wonderful.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. So let's go to 82. The recession is raging. Mm-hmm. There are special sessions that work or don't work. Then you have another special session because you got another revenue forecast, and he's yeah. going to take another $200 million out. And Vic, at some point, his close staff, it drove them nuts. He would never really tell them when he was going to run, and he decided late. But he gets in the race. He describes the economy as something that he felt comfortable working with. But he also describes Ted Kulongoski, didn't really have any competition, he was the guy, as this Kennedy-esque type. So the old guy against the Kennedy-esque
mm-hmm,
type.
Mm-hmm.
All of that being said, and the polls showed that Atiyah was in trouble, but by the beginning of September, it was pretty clear to everybody except the people right around Vic, who still won't say it, Denny was running the campaign, Atiyah was going to win this thing. Kulongoski's just campaign hadn't come together,
mm-hmm.
This kind of stuff. So what do you remember about the dynamics of that campaign? And you were part of the training for the debate group.
Yeah.
So.
Well, two formative thoughts in my head right now. The first is, I think it was necessary, as it becomes sometime in politics, to early establish the notion that the challenger is a risk
mm-hmm.
and is a dangerous person.
Mm-hmm.
And that theme emerged, and probably correctly so. I mean, there was a concern, I think, that two completely different styles of, first of all, two different political backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
and one a very traditional Republican business person incumbent against a very entrenched liberal Democrat labor lawyer that espoused principles that were just
yeah.
different than
yeah.
what Vic had been raised on.
Yeah.
I don't remember Vic personally ever being in any way vicious or
mm-hmm.
mean,
mm-hmm.
Although when he felt something or somebody was just plain wrong, he would say so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was calmer in appearance than he must have been, because all of us would have felt that this is going to be an uphill climb. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we're managing in very difficult times, and this is a time that voters like to make changes.
Yeah.
At least that was the conventional wisdom.
I tell you, from the political science point of view, there's no way he should have won.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
but
so yeah.
So I can't even remember what the alternative would have been if he had said, I've taken my blows in
mm-hmm.
this, and I'm going to step mm-hmm. out.
Yeah.
I don't think that was an alternative for him.
Yeah.
In hindsight, what was he going to do?
Yeah.
And he did carry the banner for his party, which was in a minority position in the legislature. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think if he even analyzed it, that maybe he was going to have to fall on his sword during a campaign and not just leave the field of battle.
Right.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of Denny's take on this over the years. And so I remember the debate as mm-hmm. being a very interesting focal point. And having been engaged early on as sort of a glorified intern, although a paid staffer, in the Packwood campaign against mm-hmm. Wayne Morse,
mm-hmm.
and the pivotal nature of the debate that at a very critical moment of peaking gave final thrust to the Packwood campaign, albeit you know mm-hmm. a few thousand votes that were about two votes per precinct across the state margin.
Right.
I think at that point we were still all convinced that the power of television and media was a key factor, and that a debate had to be clearly a deciding point for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so a lot of time was spent in that. I would say Denny was the chief coach.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us were basically listening and commenting and mm-hmm. Offering maybe slight nuances.
Mm-hmm.
But tactically it was, you have three messages, you've got to bridge back to those three messages mm-hmm. over and over and over. I mean, mm-hmm. nothing that isn't now pretty hackneyed in television and movies and everything else. But indeed, that was it. It was mm-hmm. Vic had to stay on message and not get ruffled by, as you described, Ted, this younger Kennedy-esque, mm-hmm. you know, he's got the solid jaw and the good look. And I'm thinking that the governor really kind of relished that, but I also can picture a moment when he would push back and say, no, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Denny and others incorporated what he really wanted to do into the three messages, bridging back to the three messages. But it wasn't just, okay, we're going to spoon feed you. You're going to memorize what other people are telling you. He was the governor.
Yeah.
You know, he had that advantage.
Yeah.
He proudly wore the gold pin and the lapel and the cufflinks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was probably in maybe two or three of those sessions getting mm-hmm. ready for those debates.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember meeting in the hotel room, I believe, after one of them, and all of us having this kind of moment of catharsis.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more about, we didn't lose points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, held our own against the young challenger who's out there to make a name for himself. And but it wasn't jubilant, and it wasn't it was just, we wanted to reinforce him. He'd mm-hmm. you know, probably used up a lot of adrenaline,
mm-hmm.
and ours was probably all gone, but we mm-hmm. felt it was our role to congratulate him on going through that and doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember it being a stunning blow.
Yeah.
We just didn't want to backstep anywhere.
Yeah. Exactly. One thing that Ted remembers, because Denny, one of the main focuses Denny had was the plant closure bill.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was interviewing Ted, he just started out and said, okay, it was a big mistake to name that thing the plant closure bill.
Yeah.
But apparently in some of the public appearances, Vic would do kind of a Joe McCarthy thing. Plant closure bill, and he'd pat his pocket. I have a list of the plants that are going to be closed. You don't have a list? There's no list. And he wouldn't say anything. He'd just, you know, do this.
Yeah. Vic had a nice sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
You know, I related the one about I was hoping we'd have chicken early in our discussion today.
Yeah.
But he just, he had what I wouldn't call, he wasn't flashy. Nobody would say he was flashy. He just had a nice sense of timing.
Yeah.
Gentle, then strong, then a little humor, and then back to being forceful in a quiet
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I'm going through my interviews with him, and I summarize them. I don't transcribe them because transcribing doesn't, the grammar doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many, he has so many throwaway asides. And so I have to put in brackets, chuckles. Otherwise, no, he didn't mean this that way.
Yeah.
He's laughing when he says this. But, yeah. Barbara Roberts remembers him because she was newly married to Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic, well, she said it at the memorial service. Vic kind of came across the floor and said, oh, you're the new bride. But Vic on the floor of the Senate would never sit in his seat. He'd stand at the back of the room. And she always knew where he was because he'd be back there and he would have told somebody a joke that didn't quite work, but he had a great time. So there'd just be this laughter
mm-hmm.
going on back mm-hmm. there.
A lot of people who've not served down there would never probably understand, well, how come these people aren't in their seats and why aren't they listening intently and why are these side conversations going on and there's a buzz across the floor while somebody's addressing the mm-hmm. chair. And it. But I would say that when you got back under the gallery, under mm-hmm. the back wall and could quietly engage with somebody, it was a tremendous opportunity to kind of let go of what all this is about out here mm-hmm. for the moment mm-hmm. and build a relationship. Vic probably was the one who made it clear to me that of the 2,000 some votes you'll cast in a session, there'll be four or five that will be very, very contentious,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be either on the winning or the losing side.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time, it's good work from committees that came to the floor and probably will pass.
Yeah,
and you know there'll be throwaway lines on the floor, but it's not the great moment of yeah. the session.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so learning about. Lee Johnson and Jim Redden used to write each other's lines as they were going to pummel each other. So, you know, these kinds of things.
Yeah.
So anything else stick out about Victor George Atiyeh?
Yeah, I would say that I came to admire him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that being the minority leader in the Senate, was...
Mm-hmm. Monroe, I mean, he had six in his caucus.
Yeah.
Bob Smith would never show up. I'm interviewing him tomorrow morning.
Yeah. I'll be interested how Bob is. We used to be in regular touch, and I haven't talked to him in probably a year now. But
yeah.
Please say hello to Brother Smith for me.
I shall.
I recall being found by a page and then directed to a uniformed officer off the side aisle and being asked to get down to the garage and move my car, which I had left running in the middle of the aisle, blocking access to, and I thought, this doesn't sound right. I'm in my parking space number 7 down there. What's this car look like? And I think it was a Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I think that's the other Smith.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. I
wonder if the Roberts family ever had those problems.
I'm sure. Well, you've got an interesting challenge. I'm anxious to see the website. And when do you give yourself a deadline on some of this?
I'm hoping that the book is next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think there'll be some really interesting things that come off this as we're looking at the presidential election, just in terms of do people want to get things done or they want to just yell at each other.
Mm-hmm.
The other part, and this depends on Jerry, but I'm getting more and more out of her, the real story of the Rashid Issues has never been told. And Jerry's the crucial person.
Although, Dave Frohnmayer was fairly open about it from the point of view of the state's chief legal officer.
Yeah, he died the Thursday, I was going to call him Thursday of that week.
Mm.
And about, I guess it's now more than a year ago, last January, Vic gave me, there was an abortive attempt to do a biography of him about 10 years ago. And so he sent me a list of the people that were supposed to have been interviewed, mm-hmm. most of whom have never heard of this woman. But he wrote down D for dead and F for frail on the list. So Mark Hatfield, D,
mm-hmm.
going down. And so when my sabbatical started at the end of January this year, it was hit the F's.
Yeah.
And Dave wasn't on the list. So.
Well, for several reasons now more obvious.
Yeah, yeah. And so.
We.
But there's all sorts of people from the AG's office who were in mm-hmm. the meetings.
Bill Geary.
Yeah. But Jerry was the key. And it's not just the state. There's stuff with the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
So in this time of this, you know, war on terror, we found out that the different parts of government not only won't talk to each other, they mm-hmm. can't. She made it happen. From the FBI down to the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a story there that I think really needs to be told. And so we'll see how much she's willing to.
Yeah. I've enjoyed, I've been on the Oregon State Capitol Foundation since its inception
mm-hmm.
and served with Jerry and Denny on that board, and Jerry still. And one of the pleasures of being on that foundation is the relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from Jane Cease,
mm-hmm.
Jerry, Frankie Bell, you know, all of the inhabitants and all of them probably admirers of Dick and Dolores's.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you're going to get the other side of the story, but you'll get that whole story. Just from an observer's point of view, from that moment when we had that intimate conversation about family, he was so incredibly focused on Dolores and that relationship. When things were going well there, things were all fine with Dick.
Yeah, yeah. That's when he died and people were asking me, that's, I got to tell you, you know, he loved that woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Loved that woman. People had talks with him because she, you know, she's with dementia and things like that. And he would always explain to him, no, it's till death do you part.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
And that... That's almost a good theme for the way he lived his life. I mean, mm-hmm. he was he had a cultural background that had codes of honor,
mm-hmm.
And they weren't just words or thoughts or metaphors. They were a course-setting way for him to live his life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, I'm sure there's a temptation to. Give him sainthood too soon, mm-hmm. you know, but he...
Well, he wanted warts and all, so...
Yeah.
And people like, for instance, Hardy was wonderfully honest. I loved him, I hated him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of stuff is going to come through pretty strong
mm-hmm.
As we go into this. You know, he's a human being.
Yeah. And I like your original approach when we started talking that... There was an era here, and now there are other eras in mm-hmm. his life that I'm sure you're covering, but that period of time that he was governor and mm-hmm. Responsible for some of the most difficult times for Oregonians.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get right down to it, it wasn't about how clever you can be and can you find the last vote to do a tax surcharge. I mean, mm-hmm. that's tough enough in an environment that is... volatile, but at the end of the day, it's really about what's happening to my state.
Yeah,
and I, we've honored a lot of governors with state parks and other things that keep their memory alive. Vic Atieh was worried about his state.
Yeah,
and the people in the state. Yeah. I mean, the state had boundaries, but the natural characteristics of the state, coupled with the people that lived there, mattered to him.
Yeah, it really did.
It was a passion.
Yeah, just as you're saying that, because as you know, things come to me. So, I learned I don't have to write much down because I'm recording things.
Mm-hmm.
People give me phone numbers. Let me write that. Oh wait, you just say it and it's there. But it just occurred to me the Portlandia image is Neil Goldschmidt's legacy.
Mm-hmm.
The Intel image is Vic Atieh's legacy. Now, there's still huge problems, which you know well, mm-hmm. sitting here, you know, in this foundation.
Yeah.
So much of the state that's not part of that.
Yeah.
But
we're sitting in it right now. You're right.
But there's something to be said about that. I think that's worth really, really seeing if it works, mm-hmm. making the argument.
I assume Paul Phillips is in the list here someplace.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's several people. Paul Phillips, Len Bergstein ran the two Straub campaigns. Mm-hmm. So there's those people.
Yeah.
But I've kind of floated it out there saying, after the session's over, I'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing.
I raised Paul only because, for several reasons, not least which is the connection to the university.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm supposing that maybe he had some influence in...
I don't know that he did.
In Vic's connection there. But
We don't know that he did.
Okay.
The main thing, which I came to discover, Vic, because he was elected in 58, so 59 on, they were the multiple member districts up until the 72
mm-hmm.
election,
yeah.
or 74 election. So he loved those districts. The governing was a very different beast
mm-hmm.
when they switched. He also got meaner letters because he belonged to his district.
And I often look at single member districts when I used to talk on this kind of thing
mm-hmm.
as a profound change in Oregon.
Yeah.
And there was that notion, Atiyah and Hartung and others like that could, have a countywide reach.
Yeah.
And then one person, one vote says we've got to be more deliberative about getting people into districts. But he did come through that other era.
Yeah, he did come through that era. And he was Pacific University's representative and senator. And so
And then maybe Paul's connection was just being his ombudsman at one time, and then Paul got the central committee appointment when I resigned my seat.
Okay.
So he was my immediate successor.
Okay.
That's why I raised his name in the two connections.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Paul, he was Vic's intern, and Vic didn't want any stinking interns. Paul also describes going into his office and he could barely see the man through the cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
But, then poof, came on. Mm-hmm. I interviewed Ed Atiyah, who was Vic's driver in 78 for the primary, and was very thankful to hand it off to a young Paul Phillips who would be the driver
mm-hmm.
and, go on to greater...
And that's what I used to do for Clay.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the law school across the street. He'd call and say, do you have time tomorrow after classes? Can you drive me to Albany? I'm going to be in the parade. And it was a great way to just see a statewide office holder in action, because the briefing book would be there and I'd go through and say, okay, it looks like you're going to see the following people probably in some crowd somewhere today. The encyclopedic mind would click in, and it's a fabulous way to learn at the hand of a senior politician.
Yeah.
Is to spend a few days in the car with him.
Yeah, absolutely. If you drove with Clay, did you ever do things not like that? Did you ever, go when he was going to talk to donors or anything like that?
I actually chaired his, Travis Cross,
uh-huh.
in a meeting when Clay was to be reelected, said, I think we need somebody younger for chairman here, and I'm going to vote for Norm Smith. And so it was the honorary chair of one of his campaigns. So, I spent time on the political side as well as the political science side.
Right.
Yeah.
The reason I ask is because Ed Atiyah observed it, and then I've been putting together with wonderful talks with other people. When Vic was running for statewide office, it was still everybody had to go for timber money somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted Kulongoski brings up in 82, he was competing for the same money Vic was. The public employee unions didn't come on mm-hmm. until after, and now they're the money bags for all that the Democrats. But especially in 78, Vic at one point went to some timber company, and he came out, and Ed, his nephew, was saying he was really angry because there was supposed to be a check and it wasn't there.
Mm.
That's because they were holding back for when McCall won the primary. All the money would go to whoever the Democrat was. McCall doesn't win, Atiyah wins, and all of a sudden that money flows there, and Bob Straub is the one who gets angry because, he's a timber landowner.
Yeah.
And all the timber money was going to Vic and not to him. But just the concept, they had to compete for the same pot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
small state.
Yeah, small state, absolutely.
And those weren't the days when you had big independent PACs from outside the state that wanted to influence the outcome.
I mean, it
may be trivial amounts, but
yeah,
it was really about who you knew and who was ultimately loyal to their word here.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun stuff. Fun stuff. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for including me.
Yeah, and this is great.
I'm delighted. And I'll be anxious, as I said, to read and